The Dow Jones Industrials blasted higher by nearly 300 points on dovish talk from the latest FOMC meeting. Welcome, everyone. It's great to have you back with us this weekend for another BigGoldSeek.com radio broadcast. Your host, Chris Waltzek, in rare form behind the turntable, manning the house music post, ready to entertain and educate. Will they or won't they? That's the question on every investor's mind. Of course, I'm referring to the benchmark lending rate at the Fed. Will they ever pull the trigger? And does it even matter? What will it mean for our portfolios? Well, that's just one of today's hot topics I put in front of our guests. First out of the bullpen, James Turk from Gold Money's warmed up his pitching arm. He expects safe haven buying in the Eurozone to intensify, making precious metals investments once again the asset class du jour. For the first time this century, the New York Fed's gold reserves recently dropped below 6,000 tons. He says this is likely just more evidence of market manipulation. And then he expects the dollar rally to fade, making precious metals even more appealing. Next on the pitcher's mound, John Williams returns to GoldSeek.com radio with dire thoughts on the veracity of the official economic numbers. According to one Wall Street Journal report, the typical American household spends over 62% of its take-home pay just on housing and grocery bills. Expect runaway inflation followed by hyperinflation. He's sticking to his target. He doesn't buy the deflation rhetoric. Watch out above for gold. Then Robert Ian returns to the show with his must-hear report, wrapping up the broadcast. Send in your latest questions and comments on our new hotline 24/7. You can leave your first name or remain anonymous if you prefer. It's no longer toll-free. Be sure and check with your local provider first, please. The Q&A hotline 1-206-666-5370. GoldSeek.com radio begins now with the market recap. Well, sunny skies appeared over the precious metals market this week. At Friday's closing bell on the New York COMEX exchange, the yellow metal was up about $2, finishing around $12.04 an ounce. Silver was off just 37 cents at about $16.38 an ounce. The XAU Gold and Silver Equities Index added $1.32, about 2% for the week, closing near $69. And West Texas Intermediate Crude continued in its upward ascent, adding $2, about 4%, finishing at $51.64. A barrel, rebounding in a four-week rally. Well, the top story driving the sector this week stemmed from the Fed's March 17th and 18th meeting, released on Wednesday. Several Fed Reserve policymakers hinted that there would be no rate hikes before September of this year. This more dovish stance was blamed on the sluggish jobs report last week, the weakest in some time, amid stronger dollar and weaker oil prices. In fact, inflation remains well below the Fed's annual 2% target. The benchmark rate has been held near zero since the 2008 financial crisis. Meanwhile, Fed Chair Janet Yellen reiterated that a rate hike is data dependent. The Fed is obviously watching the numbers closely. The dual requirement of solid job growth and inflation must be seen before a rate hike. She also said she would be uncomfortable raising rates if inflation were to weaken any further, indicating growing concerns over deflation given the negative interest rates in the Eurozone. Fed futures odds of a rate hike declined slightly this week. Still, the meeting minutes kept the option open for a rate hike as soon as this June. Precious metals, bottom line. Well, the explosive dollar rally continued this week, drawing considerable attention away from the metal sector. So expect to sell the rumor by the fact scenario sometime later this year, late summer to early August, I'd expect. Don't forget to log into your Alpha Stocks newsletter account for the latest stock candidates. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, mostly cloudy weather was seen over the New York Stock Exchange on Friday. The Dow Jones Industrials Average added 294 points for the week, 1.66%. The S&P 500 ended at 2102, up 35 points, about 1.5%, and the NASDAQ added 109, the best of the three, up 2.2%, finishing just shy of 5,000, and within striking distance of the year 2000.com peak. Well, investors cheered the meeting minutes report. No news was good news. Consumer discretionary stocks were red hot this week, topping the advance in the S&P 500 on Friday, up 1%. Just as hot, the healthcare sector gained nearly as much on jubilation over a potential deal between Mylan and rival Perrigo for about $29 billion. Mylan shares leaped about 16% on the news, while Perrigo advanced 18%. Top analysts expect the relatively tame corporate earnings figures to pick up in the second quarter. So far, the 20 S&P 500 companies which have reported earnings came in a bit lower than a year earlier, according to one media source. Plus, the recent four-week rebound in oil prices has boosted the sagging energy company components of the S&P 500. In related news, another merger included Royal Dutch Shell, which agreed to buy BG Group, a $70 billion deal resulting in the world's largest independent producer of liquefied natural gas. Although Royal Dutch fell a bit on the report, BG Group blasted 28% higher on the news. Bottom line, on Wall Street. While our 7-indicator sentiment index flew back into the greedy zone this week in whipsaw-like fashion, what could have been a sell-off seems to have been preempted by favorable Fed rhetoric. Clearly, officials want to keep the dance music in full swing to the delight of traders and investors alike. Coming up after the break, more GoldSeek.com radio with the listeners' Q&A segment, plus our guests. So we'd like for you to stay with us right here at GoldSeek. Great to have you back with us at GoldSeek.com Radio. Time to open up the phone line and reach into the mailbag for listeners' questions and comments.
Hi, Chris. This is Marcus calling. I'm a longtime listener, and I wanted to thank you for the great work you do on your show. It really provides valuable insight. I wanted to let you know about a service that I use that I thought you and other listeners would be interested in. Anyone that's perhaps done some preparation at home to plan for emergency preparedness, maybe put aside some food and water, that type of thing. There's a group of ex-military men, Green Berets, who are really quite exceptional, and they've developed a consulting firm called the Yarborough Group. They'll come into your house and interview you and your family, basically give you a grade in terms of what kind of preparations you've done and if they're adequate or not. They can help you with everything from a fire evacuation plan for you and your children to a survival plan in case communications go down and you need to meet up so that you have a plan in place. So I really think it's an invaluable service. They can be reached at yarboroughgroup.com. It's yarboroughgh.com. Thanks, Chris.
Well, hi, Marcus. You know, I can vouch for your comments. You've been a friend to the show for quite some time, and I don't think you'd suggest anything, any service that wasn't legitimate. If you have the means, it does sound like an interesting option to further investigate. But I think for the, you know, the regular bourgeois middle-class folks like myself on a household budget, I'd suggest Lou Rockwell's site. They regularly have excellent articles on household survival preparations, and I presume that everyone listening to our voice has the GoldSeek news updates also bookmarked on every web browser. Thanks, Marcus.
Hi, this is Rick from Cannonsburg, Pennsylvania. A couple of questions from your program from the weekend of January 4th. Harry Dent, who's been pretty right on in recent years, has recommended holding cash. I think that's a good recommendation. However, how do you hold the cash? The G20 meeting formalized the bank bail-in program, so I'm concerned that putting cash in the banks would see it disappear, and I would pull myself out of the fire and shoot myself in the foot at the same time. The next question, when John Emery was making his presentation, you were talking about the performance of gold in Russia, and you indicated that the purchasing power of gold had increased something like 20 times during the crash of the ruble. Is that actual purchasing power, or is it just relative value of the money given that the price inflation was so great? Be interested to hear what you have to say. Thanks a lot. Happy New Year to everyone. Keep up the good work. Goodbye.
Okay, up next, it's Rick from Pennsylvania. He makes comments about Harry Dent Jr.'s interview and holding cash reserves. He asks, what is the best method to do so and keep your assets productive. In previous discussions on and off the air, Harry has suggested on the show that dollar ETFs such as UUP, that's the ticker symbol, which track the U.S. dollar closely, remain in a solid uptrend. Also, I think keeping several months of cash on hand is a solid method. It may seem counterproductive, but keeping cash at home in a fireproof safe can be done now for $20 or $30 on Amazon.com. They'll deliver it free of charge if you have Prime, right to your doorstep or your mailbox. Hidden, Bob Chapman used to point out, the first thing a home invader will do will just pull all the drawers and all the shelves and everything under the bed out onto the floor and rummage through that. That's one of the first things. And people think, well, I can hide it in the freezer or in the cupboards or things like that. That's the first thing they do. Under the cushions, the everyday curmudgeon has become a bit more sophisticated. And, you know, when they pick up that little hidden book safe, they'll notice that it maybe weighs a little bit more than the Holy Bible. I don't know how much good that's going to do. Next, Rick discusses John Embry's comments from Sprott Asset Management on the gold/ruble price explosion. I hope I didn't misspeak during that interview, but the increase in gold relative to the ruble was about 100% in just a few months. In fact, it moved from about 44,000 rubles per ounce to over 90,000 near the peak of last year, and it remains high at around 70,000 plus as of today. To put this in context, due to the crude oil plunge, the ruble fell so sharply that a $100,000 investment in gold doubled in value just virtually overnight. From another perspective, and perhaps more troubling, the cost of goods and services, i.e. purchasing power, blasted higher, crushing the purchasing power of those without gold and silver insurance. Food for thought and great questions. Look forward to hearing from you.
Good morning. This is Jeff calling from Denver, Colorado. I had a quick question for Chris regarding the CEF, Central Fund of Canada Limited. He had referenced it some time back ago, and I was wondering if you could give a little bit of detail about it and why he had the recommendation on it. Thank you.
Hi, Jeff. Ticker symbol CEF, or the Central Fund of Canada, is a precious metals ETF with the unusual quality of holding roughly half gold and half silver. In addition, the fund is located outside the U.S., which gives us some additional reduction in exposure to domestic issues and geographic diversification, if you will. Now, several folks I admire feel confident that the soundness of this bullion backing is apparently much higher than most ETFs. But keep in mind, you're unlikely to receive any bullion from these funds in the event of an emergency. So I still think it is something of a paper money scheme. Best for those who wish to trade and perhaps not invest. As for recommending CEF, that would only be a component of a widely diversified portfolio comprised of many competing asset classes. And if you'd like to see the most recent portfolio we have at Alpha Stocks Portfolio, we have a new one each week. I hope you'll log into your Alpha Stocks account. We've had several picks explode in recent weeks. And frankly, over the years, I challenge anyone to say we haven't outperformed the market substantially. And especially those of well-known market pundits.
This is a long-time listener, George. I have a question. Is it possible that the United States Federal Reserve manipulation be of such magnitude that it's destroying other countries' currencies, friends and foes, to create a positive rate differential, forcing foreign investors to buy our treasury notes so the U.S. government does not have to monetize the debt, and that they're keeping gold manipulated lower? So really, a foreign investor doesn't have very many places he can go except the dollar. Please elaborate on this, and I'd like to hear your comment. Thank you.
Moving on to George asks if the Fed is colluding to make the U.S. dollar more attractive, in particular the U.S. Treasury, by forcing competing currencies like the euro into negative interest rate environment, making the dollar the most attractive currency. Well, first of all, George, where have you been? We were used to regular calls from you here. All right, we're glad you're still kicking, and I think you are correct and you're on the right path, but it might be a bit more involved, I think, than maybe conspiracy. The U.S. is emerging, at least on paper, from a deep recession. Remember, we all threw around the Great Recession term starting around 2007, 2008. With the official national unemployment rate around 5.5%, nearly half of the peak number, the massive QE spending and the rate cuts have to be unwound sometime. And what better time to do it than now, right? I mean, with everybody else, with the market firing on all 12 cylinders, and we have unemployment at the lowest rate in years, inflation well under control, this is sort of the Goldilocks environment for rate hikes. However, the Fed's balance sheet chart, as seen at the St. Louis Fed's webpage, is also showing signs of slowing. That's right. After years of constant increases, you know, it's starting to slow and show some signs of rolling over, at least at last check. I think this indicates that officials are starting to put the brakes on the economy. Nevertheless, the U.S. dollar has been telegraphing that the sea change event will come to pass within less than about a year. As you know, markets tend to forecast about major changes in the market up to 6 months in advance. The greenback rally has been just one of the most explosive we've seen, maybe with the exception of the silver market circa 2010, 2011. And keep in mind, the U.S. dollar has just undone over 12 years of declines in less than 12 months. It's about 9 months. I would agree with you in theory, George, that trillions of dollars are pouring into the U.S. stock market, treasuries, and dollar-denominated assets, but I would add the proviso that the market was so oversold and so crowded on the downside that a rally was virtually inevitable. Of course, this is easy to say, as hindsight is 100% accurate. George, thanks a lot. We'll hear from you soon, hopefully. Next caller is concerned by a guest who made an extreme comment, noting that nobody knows when a market will crash.
Hey, Chris. This is Andy Johnson. I really enjoyed the interview you had with John Williams and David Morgan and Dr. Mark Hill. I just wanted to kind of hint about a little thing that happened to me that dispels a little bit about what Dr. Mark Hill said. It seems like whenever any of us use absolutes like never or nobody, we always tend to get ourselves in a little trouble with those. And he said that no one knows when this market is going to start crashing. I noticed that several years ago, an individual I know warned me of an event, a very significant event that happened to America about 4 or 5 months ahead of time. This individual, call him a modern-day fortune teller or prophet or whatever, this actually happened to me, irrefutable. There are individuals out there, I am convinced, that can see these things. I know it sounds very strange, but I would never say anything like that, but it happened to me. And so I'm convinced that there are people out there who know when this market is going to crash. Whether or not they're telling people, I don't know. But I promise you, they're out there and they know it. So I'd just like to, you know, let the listeners know that. I also enjoyed listening to John Williams. He really paints a gloom picture. I think we all need to kind of wake up and start preparing for this thing, because if his numbers are right, this is not going to be good. But anyway, I want to thank you again for efforts in your interviews, and we're all listening. Thank you.
Hi, caller. I think most of my listeners know by now. They know where I stand on prediction and forecasting. Before I give up my boring spiel, I'd like to note that I warned everyone in advance, for instance, of the housing crash on this show, Bob Chapman and I. I was more vehement, I think, at the time than our late friend, that prices would collapse in 2006 for several years and then recover in 2012. I even, you know, published my humble little wealth building strategies with Wiley Publishing, and I mean, one chapter or two on the subject, which also predicted that silver would explode and rocket from around 14, 15 an ounce to much higher. And it did shoot up threefold. And after the book was published, to well in the range of 50, as we all know. Yes, I do believe there are pockets of predictability as proposed in chaos theory. In addition, my Alpha Stocks newsletter, I think, is prima facie evidence that one man's efforts can top the market. Even the results of folks like Mad Money himself, Warren Buffett, Jim Simons. Still, the evidence shows that these these are flukes that eventually our best forecasts will fail. And unfortunately, it's usually when we're most heavily invested. We're most confident, right? It's when the male gobbler has his plumage fully erect. Well, this is why I advocate diversification with several key tweaks that are outlined in my PhD dissertation. And these are back-tested and supported by substantial Excel spreadsheets, which proves via back-testing and forward testing, irrefutably, that buying and holding can be a devastating investment strategy. Once the dissertation is accepted by the school committee, it will be available online free of charge with the Excel spreadsheets for every index stock sector. It has automatic updates. You just type in the ticker symbol and it instantly updates all of the analysis, which shows how your portfolio would have performed over the last few decades and then how it should perform. This will be available free of charge, as I said, to my Alpha Stocks newsletter. Now, regarding Mr. Williams' analysis, I concur. Hyperinflation will be devastating. It will arrive someday. However, I think the timing is a bit of a difficult matter. Right now, we appear to be facing disinflation. I disagree with a lot of the folks on my show. I do not buy the deflation thesis. I think it's interesting. There is some evidence to support it. But to me, this looks like just a slowing of inflation. Now, slowing of inflation is termed disinflation. So you might think of it as momentum is waning, or you're in your car, you're accelerating, you go up a steep hill, momentum is lost. That would be inflation, but you're increasing, you're going up at a slower rate, a slower pace, i.e. disinflation. Next up, John from Illinois is perplexed by the guest comments regarding hyperinflation.
Hi, Chris. John from Downers Grove here. I just wanted to comment on Martin Armstrong. I have not yet heard the interview. He is a controversial figure. He's made some good calls in the past. In some way, he displeased the powers that be, and they slapped him in prison for a few years, probably on some trumped-up charges, no doubt. But one of the things that kind of sticks in my craw about Armstrong, he claims there is no such thing as hyperinflation. Then I would like to know from Mr. Armstrong, how do you explain Weimar Germany, Zimbabwe, and Argentina? Let's go down. We can probably add another 100 countries to that list. They've all experienced hyperinflation. I don't know where he's getting this idea that hyperinflation has never existed anywhere in the world. It exists. It's real. And as you well know, every single fiat currency has gone down in flames, usually in a hyperinflationary scenario. So that kind of makes me doubt the veracity of his other views, because he's in denial of one of the great facts of life, monetary facts of life, that hyperinflation is part and parcel of all fiat money systems. They eventually all end in hyperinflation. There you have it. I'm looking forward to hearing what Mr. Armstrong said on the show. I just downloaded it, and I'll be listening to it this morning. And keep up the good work. Bye-bye.
John, sometimes I think comments are taken out of context. I doubt if Mr. Armstrong or anyone believes that hyperinflation is a myth. I think what was intended to be conveyed was that the U.S. won't face a bleak future, that deflation is the true threat. I've made my viewpoint on inflation for a decade on GoldSeek, so I won't go into the minutiae, but I do agree with you. Eventually, the U.S. and the entire global Fata Morgana will evaporate, just like a mirage on the desert horizon. The exact order of these events, I think, remains unknown.
I signed up for the Alpha Stocks newsletter, and I actually forgot my user ID and password. So I was wondering how I retrieve that. Just when I go to the subscriber section, does it give me a way to renew my password, the newsletter? But if someone can at least let me know how to retrieve my user ID and password so I can get into the newsletter again, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
The next caller would like to reset his login info on the Alpha Stocks newsletter. Well, no problem at all. Just send a message, please, to gsradio@frontier.com, and I'll send over your updates.
Hi, Chris. John from Downers Grove calling. You know, I heard a great interview with Daniel Ammerman. He's a certified financial planner, about the tax treatment of gold and silver bullion as collectibles. He's got an interesting article on his website about this, showing how gold and silver bullion, the tax rate right now on it, according to Ammerman, is 28% since it's classified as a collectible. But he speculates that in any meltdown of the dollar, there's very good chance of the tax rate to become punitive. He says 50%. Well, we used to have 90% tax rates in this country. I could see it going to 90%. This is my question. Do you think you could discuss this on your show, and what would be the better way to invest in gold and silver in light of this? Mutual funds, gold mining mutual funds, gold mining stocks, individual stocks, silver mining stocks, closed-end fund like Central Fund of Canada. I'd love to hear you and a guest bat this around a bit, because I don't want to be victimized by punitive taxation on my foresight and wisdom for investing my hard-earned savings in gold and silver. Long-term capital gain right now, I think, if you would invest in a gold mining mutual fund, would be 15 to 18%, something like that. Of course, that can always change at the whim of Congress at any time. We all know that. They can even single out gold and silver mining share investors for special attention and impose an even higher tax on them. Appreciate any feedback you can get on this, because it looks like we're going to start kicking off here on a big bull run, and, you know, your listeners should be prepared. Sorry to ramble so, but great show. I listen to it every week. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Moving on to John again from Illinois. He asks for the best way to avoid tax penalties with precious metals investments. Well, hi, John. Let me give you some points to ponder that should help alleviate most, if not all, your concerns. During the financial crises that we all know are imminent, paper assets and even hard assets like real estate supplies, food, stockpiles, water reservoirs out west, etc. These are entirely owned by the government. That's right. During martial law, everything you have is virtually theirs. If it can't be hidden underground, it could evaporate with just an official's pen stroke. So as for punitive tax rates, I propose that we need to look at it from this perspective. Sure, the powers that be could try to slow the inevitable 10,000 foot high, or should I say $10,000 gold price tsunami. But their efforts will likely only encourage shrewd investors to accumulate even more precious metals, as it requires little gray matter to read between the lines when conditions are so dire that officials must step in to stop price advances. It's usually time to move the family into the survival bunker. As for specific tax advice, you know, that's not my forte. As you say, for the time being, some mutual funds receive favorable tax treatments. For my Alpha Stocks newsletter subscribers, if you are interested in a gold fund with a 10% dividend yield, I'll post a link in the newsletter this weekend for your eyes only.
Mr. Walczyk, I value the information you disseminate very highly. Perform a great duty to your fellow man. Lately, I've been experimenting with turning rooms of my house into Faraday cages. I've not yet come to a decision on the results. Are the weapons used against us too strong to defend with a simple Faraday cage? I would appreciate your input. Thank you.
Hi, caller. I, too, am a targeted individual, a TI. Please contact me at gsradio@hughes.net, and I'll offer you the best advice that I can, just like the advice I was given by researchers over 15 years ago. I'll try to help you.
Hey, Chris, John from San Diego, formerly Downers Grove, Illinois. Just a follow-up to the tag-teaming that's going on with the Fed, the ECB, and now it looks like the Bank of Japan has now stepped into the fray, since Mario Draghi over at the ECB is being restrained by Germany from going on a spending spree, buying all kinds of toxic waste. So here's the report. The Bank of Japan voted 5-4 to accelerate purchases of Japanese government bonds while tripling its purchases of exchange-traded funds and REITs, real estate investment trusts. Now, of course, the Bank of Japan is permitted, apparently by law, to do such things. I wonder if the Fed, who is not permitted to do that by real estate investment trusts and equities, is in reality buying these things through proxies to hide who's actually buying them. There is little doubt in my mind, should the markets crash, that the Fed will use what some have termed the nuclear option and step into the markets through proxies, of course, and begin buying every single thing in sight in order to prop them up until, of course, it is revealed who is really behind the buying, and then the big explosion. It will be a nuclear explosion when people realize just how much money the Fed is printing in order to prop up markets. this is not going to be pretty. I suspect we long-suffering gold and silver buyers are going to have to wait a while longer before our patience is rewarded. Comments? Thanks for the show. Bye-bye.
Next up, it's John. Third time. He now has moved to sunny San Diego. Hi, John. You know, I really can't speculate beyond the Fed's balance sheet regarding mortgage-backed security housing debt, but I think the official numbers are enormous. This does appear to be their Achilles heel and a primary reason why the Fed is so nervous regarding pulling the trigger on rate hikes. Clearly, higher rates will destroy the value of their mortgage-backed securities in their portfolio, as well as the treasury debt, as bond values are obviously negatively correlated to rates. Stay tuned. Interesting times ahead. All right, closing down the phone lines and opening up the mailbag. Only time for one email question today, so we'll move into regular contact, Vidya. He's particularly concerned about a global economic reset. I do expect a global reset scenario to play out over the next 5 to 10 years, particularly given the rush away from U.S. dollars by BRICS nation. And regarding the rupee, remember that only gold-backed currencies are insulated from government profligacy. Even the rupee is susceptible to global hyperinflation when it arrives. It appears that the global economic endgame will include a sudden collapse that will catch virtually everyone off guard, in turn making precious metals of incalculable value circa Europe in 1922. Venezuela, Zimbabwe, etc. Think of those outcomes. So I think it's a great question. It's food for thought. We all need to keep this in the back of our minds, and that's why, once again, broken record here, but you've got to have that insurance. Hard money. Closing down the mailbag. Remember to call into our toll-free hotline. We have to give our callers the highest priority. All right, coming up after the break, more GoldSeek.com radio with this week's guest interview. So stay with us right here at GoldSeek. Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
James Turk, founder of GoldMoney.com, author of The Coming Collapse of the Dollar and How to Profit from It.
Yeah, hi, Chris. Good to be with you.
Start off today with the dollar rally. Since we last talked, it continued even higher. Quite a remarkable rally over a nine-month period, erasing 12 years of losses. But some of our guests here on the show are convinced that this is just a final hurrah, if you will, before an ultimate day of reckoning for the greenback. Any thoughts on what that might mean for investors?
Yeah, I would agree with that. The fundamental underlying factors for the dollar have not really changed for the better. There's still too much debt. There's still too much government spending. What we've seen is that with interest rates in Europe moving below zero, interest rates in the United States that are still basically above zero make the dollar look like a good alternative. So in that sense, it's an emotional knee-jerk reaction, hot money moving into the dollar and driving it higher relative to the euro and some of the other currencies that have negative interest rates. But, underlying factors still suggest that the U.S. hasn't come to grips with its basic problems. You know, too much government spending, too much debt, too much printing by the money printing by the Federal Reserve. It's causing problems for the dollar, and eventually those problems will be realized.
Exactly. It just seems to be the least bad alternative, I guess, around, and money flowing in. It really props up our equities and bond markets. But probably if we saw the big picture, maybe a chart of all the currencies in the world, the long-term downtrend in fiat money would be evident. Don't you suspect?
Yeah, clearly. And in fact, if you look at gold versus all of the major currencies of the world, gold is basically up against all of them with the exception of the U.S. dollar, where it's, down a little bit. But, gold is up 10% this year against the euro, for example.
Since you're closer than the rest of us, or most of us here, to the Eurozone drama, the Grexit and so many of the issues facing or plaguing the region, do you see this eventually escalating?
Yeah, there's no doubt there are people looking for safe havens. You see it in a lot of different places, a lot of different ways. Housing prices in London, Singapore, and other safe havens are rising. A lot of money is going into collectibles and other forms of tangibles. And money's coming out of a weak spot. There's been a decline in bank deposits in Greece, for example. That money's been coming out of Greece and looking for safe havens. And as a consequence of, these monetary problems that we have in Europe, again, similar to the problems in the United States, over-leveraged governments, too much government spending, not enough wealth creation to service all of these debt obligations, it's going to come to a head. When it's going to happen, it's always difficult to get an exact timing. But so many trends coming together now, Chris, to me, it seems like you could see a lot of volatility coming, pretty soon.
You mentioned recently that the European Central Bank will expropriate deposits in Greek bank accounts to help cover those loans that the bank has made to their government. And I wonder if you could give us an idea of how this aspect of the story could impact the markets.
The European Central Bank did that in Cyprus. They've said that's going to be the blueprint for other countries in Europe that get into trouble. And, Greece is clearly into trouble. So we will see if the European Central Bank will repeat the Cyprus experience again and take away bank deposits from bank depositors after the Greek or after the, the government nationalizes the banks in that country. What it's basically doing, these types of events is they undermine confidence in fiat currency. And fiat currency rests on nothing but confidence. If that confidence disappears, you end up getting what's called a flight from the currency. The demand for that currency declines because of the perceived problems or the monetary illnesses that are affecting that currency. And as a consequence, it loses purchasing power. And it tends to happen over a fairly short period of time, as we've seen really just over the past several months with regard to the euro and how much it's dropped compared to the dollar and even some of the non-euro European currencies like the British pound.
An interesting article from Zero Hedge noted that the New York Fed stockpile of the yellow metal actually dropped below 6,000 tons for the first time in over 100 years. Could the New York Fed and some of its compatriots attempt to manipulate the markets by selling off their stockpile?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is indeed the case. You can keep a lid on the gold price for a certain extent. We saw how this happened in the 1960s, for example, during the London gold pool, where this cartel of central banks got together to keep the gold price at $35 an ounce, even though the market knew that gold was worth more than $35 an ounce. So basically, that was forcing the central banks to keep feeding physical metal into the market at that $35 an ounce price, to try to keep that lid on it. But eventually, the central banks had enough. They threw in the towel and they let the gold price rise. It's basically the same thing this time around, though obviously at a much higher price. Metals coming out of the Federal Reserve in New York as an indication of how tight physical gold is here in London. And there's no doubt in my mind that the metal is coming out of New York in order to help satisfy the strong physical demand for metal that we're seeing pretty much all over the world, but particularly in Asia, which continues to acquire, huge amounts of physical metal. And, China particularly has become now the largest buyer of physical metal every year.
Ambrose Evans Pritchard published, I thought, a rather interesting article that the U.S. might be making a huge blunder by treating China, our neighbor, as an economic foe, at least allegedly importing a huge many, many tons per day of gold. And it seems as though we might be setting ourselves up for just a strategic error here. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I do agree that it is a strategic error. You know, China is, depending on who you're measuring, who's measuring it and what time of the week it's being measured, China is either the largest or the second largest economy in the world. It's looking for stature. It's looking for respect in the community of nations. And it's looking for ways to exercise its power. And it's being thwarted of doing that within institutions created by the United States after the Second World War, like the IMF, World Bank, and things like that. So it's not surprising that China is out there creating its own institutions, most recently being the Asia Infrastructure Investment Bank, AIIB, where the U.S. was saying to its allies, you know, don't join it because America wanted to keep its influence in the prime position. But, everybody's recognized the writing on the wall that there's a lot of economic activity, a lot of growth potential in China, and a lot of nations around the world have joined that AIIB, despite the fact that the U.S. had asked them not to. You know, as the dominant monetary power after the Second World War, you know, under what's called the Bretton Woods Agreement, and thereafter under this floating currency regime that governments have been following, the U.S. government has this responsibility to the rest of the world to maintain a currency that can be used effectively in international trade. And it's a currency that, like the British pound under the classical gold standard when the British Empire was reigning supreme, it would have it would preserve purchasing power and could be used under a constant rule of law as a neutral tool in commerce. Well, the U.S. government has moved away from that in recent decades and now is using the dollar more as a political weapon rather than a neutral, allowing it to circulate as a neutral tool in commerce. And they're also looking at domestic political considerations rather than geopolitical and geomonetary situations when from the dollar's role internationally. And that's causing a lot of feedback, and it's impairing the dollar's role. And that ultimately, I think, will decrease the demand for the dollar, and I think is likely to be one of the reasons why the dollar will be heading south as we move toward the end of this year.
Add to your comments, your earlier comments regarding China's appetite for the yellow metal. India is now trying desperately to compete with China's voracious appetite, according to Bullion Star, exploding imports. The race seems to be on to insulate from what they probably perceive as profligacy on an epic scale.
Yeah, I think this is going to be an interesting year as we move toward the end of the year. We have a lot of events coming up over the next several months, particularly September, October, November, when the IMF is meeting to determine the reweighting of the special drawing right, the SDR. And we'll see whether or not China is included in the new reweighting of the SDR. If it's not included or if China's not happy with the way it's been treated, I think that could have a profound effect on the global monetary system, which I'm basically thinking would be very bullish for gold and very negative for the U.S. dollar.
If you could tell folks a bit more about goldmoney.com.
Yeah, I'm the founder of Gold Money. We're an online company, goldmoney.com. Very convenient, economical, and safe way to buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and to have that metal stored for you in a number of different vaults around the world to give you a geographic diversification of your precious metal portfolio.
Very good. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chris.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant cave KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Well, Mr. John Williams, head of ShadowStats, an alternative economic resource that's widely acclaimed by many of the folks in the gold community and the mainline media.
Thanks for having me, Chris. We've had some extraordinary distortions in the markets in the last year, particularly since June of 2014. At that point in time, because of the situation in the Ukraine, we saw some actions taken by the U.S., some overtly against the Russian leaders and covertly in the area of trying to knock down oil prices and strengthen the dollar in an effort to create financial stress for Russia. And we were successful in doing that, but that threw off a lot of factors from what I would have expected. Very simply, where the dollar was played up, where the markets picked up on it, was very much along the lines of the U.S. economy's booming along now, and the Federal Reserve's going to take a more normal monetary policy. They'll start raising interest rates, and all that was used to help rally the dollar. Problem is, the economy never recovered from the big downturn that we had started in 2007 into 2008 into 2009. Worst contraction since the Great Depression. That's official. I'll contend, though, that we did not recover, as the official numbers show, starting in the middle of 2009. You go by the official GDP numbers, the broadest measure that the government publishes on the economy. Mid-2009, the economy began recovering, and by early 2011 had exceeded where it was before the recession. It just continued growing ever since. You don't see that in any other series. And I'll contend that the underlying reality has been one of a plunge into 2008, 2009, and then basically a period of protracted stagnation. There have been some series that have started to climb, but they have not recovered. So coming into the end of this last year, all of a sudden we're seeing booming GDP reporting, the strongest economic growth in over a decade, which again was not the common experience. You have pockets of weakness and strength, but largely weakness still around the country. What's kept all of this from really becoming a boom, as I'm sure everyone would like to see, has been the consumer. Consumer generally has been strapped for liquidity. Income is not growing, net of inflation. Credit's tough to come by. That's one way you could get beyond not having real growth in income, inflation-adjusted income. Consumer confidence, you hear all the headlines here about how it's recovered, but still, historically, it's at levels that you normally see in a recession. We don't have a recovery with a consumer. If a consumer doesn't have real growth in income, I'm talking here adjusted for inflation, there's no way you can have sustained growth in consumption. Again, shy of the debt growth, which is also restricted at this point. And that's more than 70% of the economy. It's also hitting still the housing market. So all these numbers that we saw last year, towards the end of the year, were just nonsense in terms of what was being reported. There are a number of ways or a number of things that explain that. What you could have expected, indeed what happened, even the official numbers started to turn down in the last several months, enough so that market sentiment is beginning to shift towards the economy certainly being weak in the first quarter. It certainly has been so far in terms of the reporting, and I've been contending that would happen. But even more so that this will be the onset of what will be recognized as a new recession. That's not a circumstance in which the Fed is going to continue to ease, continue to tighten, to move away from easing. And it's the expectation that the Fed would tighten that has probably been the biggest factor behind the strength in the U.S. dollar in the global markets. That and the expectations of continued economic growth. These economies slowed. We've seen expectations shift on the Fed. You've seen some weakness in the dollar. We still have a long ways to go before we get back to where we were last June. But some in substance, I think the corner's been turned and turned in terms of the mania that we almost had coming into the this year. Again, as the dollar strengthened, it tended to also weaken gold and silver. As we see the economy turn into recession, which still is not broadly anticipated, you'll find the pattern here will accelerate. You'll see greater downturn in the dollar, which in turn will be more inflationary, tend to push oil prices back up. It'll pressure gold and silver prices to the upside. And it's the reversal of what I would refer to as a market craziness of the last 8 months or so that we have ahead of us in the next several months. So that I would see that generally as a time where you're going to see some recovery in the price of gold, and as a circumstance for the Fed that is just impossible, because what happened here with the central banks, not just the Fed but the rest of the world, but the Fed leading the pack, was that in the crisis of 2008, the panic of 2008. They were faced with a collapse of the banking system, and they did everything. Anything they had to do to keep the system from collapsing. The problem, they did nothing that fundamentally improved things. All they did was they pushed the problems into the future. And now we're in that future. They don't have the options they had back in 2008. It's going to get very difficult. I look for still a panic decline here in the dollar that will be coming along. I can't tell you just when it's going to happen. The timing in something like a panic is somewhat irrational in nature, but everything's in place. And as the more of a sell-off you see in the dollar, the more of a pickup you're going to see in domestic inflation. And that, in turn, is going to become a runaway inflation as the rest of the world begins to not just sell the dollar, but to dump the dollar. Again, this is in the context of all that's happened since 2008. The crisis ahead is going to be extremely difficult, going to lead to very high inflation and hyperinflation down the road here, so that it's an environment where the individual needs to look at preserving his or her wealth and assets in terms of purchasing power. The best bet on that is holding physical gold and silver that provides you with a store of wealth that rides through the difficult times. And as you come out on the other side, it also is liquid and will tend to preserve the purchasing power of the assets that were put into the gold and the silver.
You know, this idea of inflation, deflation, there's considerable debate. It seems like every time the dollar goes up and commodities sag, the deflationists win the argument, and when the contrary happens, vice versa. What they're interpreting to be deflation might just be disinflation or slowing of the inflation rate temporarily.
Look back at the money supply, and you get into the notional value of the derivatives. It's pretty difficult to put a hard number as to how it would play out, because the normally the exposures are a lot smaller than the notional value. You have a system where the government could intervene and basically freeze the system and prevent some of the collapse that would come with that if you had major defaults, which would then expose people to the notional value in terms of a liability or conceivably an asset. I don't see that. I mean, there are going to be a lot of problems here, but the big issue is going to be the collapse in the dollar. And with that, as the dollar becomes worthless, the rest of it doesn't make much difference, because there's no a hyperinflation. What might be worth $1 trillion today could be in terms of purchasing power worth $100.
What about for our listeners who might be scratching their heads saying, but haven't we just seen the greenback erase losses in the blink of an eye? That would seem to indicate underlying strength. You view this as an anomaly then?
Well, it's a canard. The dollar has been in general decline and to a certain extent a matter of a direct policy of the U.S. government and the Federal Reserve over decades. I mean, if you go back to 1970, I think you'll find that the dollar has lost in excess of 90% of its value against the Swiss franc, for example. We have seen some rally all since June of last year. Otherwise, we're pretty much at all-time lows, and that took us to multi-year highs. But I think that was largely an artifact of what was being done to try and damage the Soviets and maybe trying, not the, excuse me, the Soviet, the Russia, at the same time perhaps trying to give some troubled European systems a little bit of a breather. The problem is those who think that the U.S. dollar is the strong currency against the rest of the world, they're missing the mark. The U.S. has the same problems that you see in the rest of the world, probably and indeed a lot greater. Fiscal circumstances beyond control and containment. Our economy has not recovered. It's turning down again. None of this is being viewed too closely in the rest of the world. You've had a lot of hype, which has been used to prop up the dollar. But now the reality on the economy is beginning to come into play, and that in turn forces the Fed into a circumstance where maybe the Fed is going to be raising interest rates, and they talk back and forth and play games and trying to jawbone the markets. But the economy is weakening at a pace, and we'll see this in the next several months, that will pretty much forestall not only the Fed raising interest rates, but very possibly putting it into a circumstance where it will actually expand its easing, and that would be horrendous for the dollar. The reason behind the dollar strength has been what was due to a shift in perceptions that all of a sudden we had a better economy, better monetary policy, better fiscal policy. Well, that's nonsense, and all that's beginning to fall apart. As it falls apart, you'll find the dollars we'll be back to where it was a year ago, with the rest of the world not wanting to hold the Treasury securities and viewing the dollar as a long-term loss, which I know they generally do. You'll see that selling accelerate.
For those of our listeners who'd like to find out more about the work that you have online, as well as your newsletter and related services, please tell people how they can find the information.
The website is shadowstats.com. Go to the website and you look in the right-hand column. You'll see at the top of that column a number of free documents. Hyperinflation report is the standard of what I see generally unfolding, although it's dated 2014, the material in it holds. We're still moving along the general track of what I'm looking for there. We have alternate measures on unemployment, inflation, the GDP. Those are all available to visitors on the website on our homepage. And we do offer a, say, call it a weekly commentary. It comes out at least once per week, normally probably twice a week, depending upon economic releases, where the current numbers are analyzed, assessed, and put in the standpoint, particularly with the inflation and the GDP, what those numbers would be like if they used the older methodologies instead of the gimmicks that have been added in recent decades to understate inflation and overstate economic growth. We always appreciate any subscribers. It's not a real expensive newsletter, $175 a year, $89 for 6 months. And we do have in the left-hand column the headlines from the recent releases, so you can get a pretty good sense as to what we're looking at.
We'll look forward to having you back on the show.
Well, you're welcome, and again, thanks for having me, Chris.
Here here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.
Hey, Chris, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com. I awoke this morning to Apple's announcement in my inbox that their smartwatch was now available for pre-order. Needless to say, I clicked straight through and examined the new gold watch. Depending on the model and the amount of gold present, the prices range from $10,000 to $17,000 each. The gold watch cases range by weight from 54 grams to 69 grams of gold, depending on the model, which converts to 1.9 ounces of gold to 2.43 ounces of gold per watch. Using $1,200 an ounce gold, that equates to a range of $2,280 to $2,916 worth of gold per Apple Watch. Other versions of the Apple Watch range in price from $350 to $750, with one as high as $1,100. But even with styling and craftsman surcharges, $1,100 is a moonshot from $10,000. So the question is, does the gold watch cost that much more to produce? Is it just a higher margin item? Or does Apple expect a significant spike or revaluation in the price of gold that has already been factored into the price of the Apple Watch? It's anybody's guess. Imagine if the price of gold shot up, but the price of the gold watch remained steady, at least for a while. I can see the headlines now. Will Apple raise the price of its gold watch to match the growing global appetite for gold? If indeed, as some have speculated, the demand for the gold watch, especially in Asia and China, consumes up to one-third of annual global gold production, Apple and the consumers who buy from them will become most likely some of the biggest drivers of the gold market. Apple is already getting some bad press, at least here in the U.S., because the various watch models all sold out within the first 30 minutes of becoming available. And wait times are now estimated between 6 and 8 weeks, according to MarketWatch. That demand and wait time may increase as the watches can be previewed live at Apple stores and the gold watches at select stores. Of the four Apple stores here in Las Vegas, only one has the gold watch for preview. And those preview by appointment times are going fast. I already have mine scheduled. Chris, I'd like to urge all of our listeners to sign up for my email list at conquerchange.com, and if any of our listeners are ever involved in bringing in keynote speakers for their companies or professional organizations, please visit my companion website at robertian.com. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with conquerchange.com, reminding you to follow us on Twitter at conquerchange. Thanks, Chris.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.